Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Wow! You guys are in luck. There's another fantastic episode of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show on right now.
What are we going to talk about this week?
I don't know, but I'm going to tell him my name.
Ah!
My name's Alon.
And my name's the newly food-poisoned Ara.
And my name's Richard.
I point out that if you were really had food poisoning right now, you'd probably not be in as fantastic shape as you are.
This is the kind of dedication that I have for the show and for all our listeners.
Question one, what did you eat?
It starts with C.
Chicken?
And ends with E.
Yeah, Chinese food, man.
Chinese food.
All right, so...
Question two, are you running?
What?
Are you running?
Was that like a refrigerator joke or something?
No.
So let me explain why I'm going
to
stop this conversation.
Refrigerator.
This is why I'm going to stop this conversation, because on the way to work today, or on the way to the radio show today from work, I decided, you know what? I'm going to use my fancy schmancy iPod and go onto iStitcher and just whatever video game podcast I can find on there, I'm going to listen to on the way to work.
You mean iPhone?
iPhone, whatever.
Yeah.
What did I say?
You said iPod. You got to let people know you're cooler than just an iPod.
Okay. So anyway.
I'm not going to be here next week, by the way.
Fantastic.
Lies.
So I will... I listened to this podcast on the way. It even over Edge, I was able to get it. So
awesome!
I listened to this podcast that will remain unnamed. However, it made me realize why, one, I don't listen to video game podcasts, or most podcasts in general. Two, that I have to apologize to our listeners because I know that podcasts out there and shows in general, whether it's a radio show or a podcast or whatever, have a whole lot of opportunity to completely suck ass. And our show is not immune from that. We do a lot of sucky stuff. And I am going to be doing my darndest to avoid... We only get 41 minutes, 42 minutes a show. So hopefully we can avoid being absolute crap. But like... Man, I wish other shows would take that. Like, you've got a two-hour show. It doesn't have to be 2 hours if you stop being an idiot and maybe talk about something relevant, which I know we go off topic all the time. Right, but I'm going to do my best to maybe give you some good content in that 40 minutes so that you can avoid listening to those two-hour shows that just suck. And We'll try to be the best podcast out there.
Although, you know, every once in a while we have to be kind of sucky just to show people how good we can really be. Because if we were really good all the time, then people would get used to it. And then we might have like really awesome ratings and then like, you know, get really popular. And
if you hear those noises in the background, that's me making sure we're not a good show all the time because my headphones aren't working right.
Very nice.
So I'm fumbling around.
By the way, only the people in the studio are talking, so you don't have to wear the headphones.
No, I like it though because it's loud. Let's get on to not crappy topics.
Let's get it on as the
There you go. Not a good start to
let's
our.
Let's get it on.
As some army sergeant says or whatever.
So what are we talking about this week?
Last week we ended on a topic that we'd been wanting to talk about for quite a while. It was suggested by Pen15 in the forums. And by the way, you can go to chatterboxgameshow.com and join in the live chat that I'm in, although not quite involved in because I gotta pay attention to doing a show.
I haven't been in chat for like a month and a half now.
You don't bring your keyboard?
Well, it's because like I have to bring my laptop like to work and then like leave it in my car where it's boiling hot.
That's why I anyway
because I can't bring it inside.
We need more dedication from you, Rich.
I understand your plight. Anyway, the topic was that we want to
figure something out,
or we're curious, or someone is curious, if a gamer should be allowed to access only the parts of the game or the elements in a game that he likes, he or she.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there are certain games where there's like unlockables, or in a narrative, there's things you have to do that are unrelated to the story and just become sort of a grinding element. Of course, this you can't just flat out give someone, let someone choose every element of the game, what they want to play and what they don't. But there are certain things you can do to not force them into something that is unrelated to the main theme of the game.
Right. Well, here's the funny part is that there's basically two sides to this issue, and one's very, very popular, and one's very unpopular. And guess which side I'm going to take?
The unpopular one?
The super popular side.
Yes. So basically, right, a lot of people are of the mindset, most people, in fact, even developers, that, well, you should be able to pretty much do anything you want in a game.
Can I just say I disagree right now before you have your explanation?
Well, he disagrees
sure,
as well.
Sure, yeah, I disagree
as
well.
I'm going to disagree to say that you should not be able to choose whatever you want.
I'm going to join the train. That's
agree
fine.
To disagree to agree.
Well, I just wanted to like put that out there before like you have this huge explanation. I go, oh yeah, I think that's right.
Okay,
fantastic.
So
that's what I'm saying.
So here's the interesting thing is that I've been thinking a lot about this lately, actually, and a lot of people they're just like, okay, well, I want to. You know, you can look at it from the marketing side, like we kind of touched on last week, right? Which is, it's a product, right? It's an entertainment product, and it has all these pieces in it. And if you pay for those pieces, then you should be able to enjoy those pieces arbitrarily at any point you want, right?
Let's actually
That's
give a
such terrible logic.
Let's put out a concrete example.
It's you know what? It's a, like for example, you know, well, the example I gave last week, which is I think the best example is. If there's 30 cars that come in the game, a lot of people have the mindset, well, I paid for 30 cars. I should be able to use any car I want. What is this? I have to, you know, wait or unlock stuff. Like the whole idea of unlocking stuff to some people is actually a minus. You know,
okay,
particularly
maybe I'm
for marketing
it differently
people.
Than you are then. Cuz
well,
I'm thinking
well,
like
obviously. Well, here's the okay, the other side of it, right? Mm-hmm. Is that okay, you know there's a prescribed series of things that you have to do things in, right? You have to do this, and then you have to do B, and then you have to do C, and then you get D.
Yeah.
Right? And if you can't do it that way, then, well, just too bad, just suck it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I'm that sounds kind of harsh, right? But it depends on how you look at the game. What kind of, I guess, entity do you consider the game to be? If you consider it to be, for example, this kind of like generalized collection of things that you're buying, well, then yes, then that approach makes sense. That kind of perspective makes sense. But if you consider it more of, you know, this is a certain experience that was authored that is intended to be, you know, that the player is, you know, intended to be subjected to in a certain way, or if you look at it from the perspective of the designer is trying to teach the player something, then having this kind of order and just letting the player do whatever they want makes no sense. It's, you know, which is mm-hmm. what you're getting at, Rich.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to put out another example there. Lately, music games have become particularly mm-hmm. popular. Rock Band and Guitar Hero and whatnot. You can't play, you know, the 40th song in the game until you've unlocked it, right? You have to get
right.
to the,
yeah.
in Guitar Hero specifically, like get to the 7th set list or you can't play them. And what bugs me is like, okay, you bring the game over, you don't have your save file, and now unless you're smart enough to go get a cheat code or you memorize it or whatever, which is always a hassle, even though, you know, I know all about how to get them,
right.
It's a hassle to do. And so you might think, well, we paid for it. Why don't I just have access to all these? And then an example of a game that lets you do whatever you want, let's just say Wii Sports, right? You don't have to unlock any of the sports games. You just have it. You pick which one you want to play,
right?
And you play it. But I think from
you
the
have to unlock some stuff in that game, though.
In which game?
In Wii Sports. There's certain things that you have to go through a set of things to unlock.
Maybe
like
I don't remember
in the training
enough,
modes, like when you go into like the training for the boxing or bowling and stuff. There's like phases you go through, like to be able to unlock a certain thing. Unless I'm crazy, like to get the huge like 100 pin bowling or whatever, like you have to do some training thing to get that to begin with.
Okay.
There's
maybe it's not a perfect
certain
example.
Amount of unlockables in that, if I remember correctly.
I may stand corrected. For the most part, though, admittedly, they...
For the most part, you can pretty much do whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a bunch of examples that are collections of minigames like that. But then there's other things like Super Monkey Ball.
Yeah.
The minigames are the best part. And you have to, like, in the second one, you have to do all these absurd things to unlock the minigames. I think you even have to do the same thing in the first one. It's just easier in the first
one. Yeah, you have to, like, gain experience points and progress through the game enough to get to play the minigames.
Yeah, and it's... The best part of the game are the mini games, and it just pissed me off.
Except for number one, where the best part is the game, but I digress.
Yeah. All right, anyway, we'll talk more about this when we get back from the break. Of course, if you want to call, it's 866-536-1100.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you. Welcome back, folks. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. And we're talking about... What are we talking about, Alon?
Video games.
If you should be able to pretty much select the... Or just get more freedom to play the elements of a game that you want to play. And the example that Penn specifically puts out there is... Should you be able to play, a narrative game without the story? Or rather, I doubt that's what he means. A game that has story in it,
right.
That is mostly gameplay.
Right.
Should you be able to just skip through the story or turn a setting off to just, okay, no story, stuff like that? I guess a Mario game might fall well into this category where there's some story, but it'd be great if you could just be like, screw it.
Well, while Rich is choking to death over there, I'd like to add that... Yeah, for certain types of games, right, because we have this weird narrative gameplay dichotomy in a lot of games where, you know, the story and the gameplay is just so distinctly separate that you could very well just skip all the story scenes and have an incredibly enjoyable and cohesive game. I think in those situations, sure, why not? You know, why would you have to sit through, you know, cutscenes that you don't feel like watching or you don't care for?
Yeah, uh-huh. I understand that.
But on the other hand, right, there's other situations, too, where it's like, well, you know, doesn't make sense to, like, skip stage 8 if I don't like stage 8.
Well, I think back to the original Mario Brothers, and I thought, okay, well, I mean, it is a linear game. However, they did build in the ability to flat-out skip worlds.
Right, but it was...
That's kind of part of the game.
It was done in a way so that it was kind of like a secret that... I want to say that... You know, they did it in a way that so you have to earn actually
skipping.
Getting there. But, yeah. I mean, once, like, it was a kind of secret where once it's common knowledge, like, everybody knows, you know. But also at the same time, you know, that game had score. So if you go by the metric of the score in the game, it's not necessarily giving you an advantage other than being able to get to, you know, farther along if you want. Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling, actually, they did it just because it's too damn long to play the game from start to finish.
It is too damn long. I think back in the day,
you couldn't really...
You know, I think that Super Mario Brothers would have been a lot more boring if you couldn't skip around like that.
Yeah.
So
people would never make it to the end.
Which is interesting because it kind of contradicts my feelings in general about it, which are that, you know, if you plan a series of things for the player to do, they should have to do those things because at least ideally, if you've designed your game in that way, it has a purpose behind it. It's not just arbitrary, right? It's like, for example, if you're teaching lessons to somebody, if you're teaching math, for example, and this correspondence is a lot closer than I think most people think, you can't do calculus before you do algebra, right? One thing builds on the other.
Yeah.
And so if the player misses something that the newer stuff is based off of, they'll find themselves kind of like not able to keep up with the new stuff.
Well, I think everyone listening to this discussion understands that there's certain linearity that's necessary.
And I think where it changes is Mario is a game where you can't save. Like, you have to start from the beginning every time. Like, if you're playing a new game, I mean, I don't know what, like, Final Fantasy 12, 13, whatever game you want to reference, if you had to start over from the very beginning every time you died, it's a completely different...
Well, sure.
It's a completely different type of game where Mario... Maybe the reason they added this in is so, okay, once you find this secret, quote-unquote, to shortcut to the next world, if you die, you don't need to play worlds 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 all simultaneously in order to get to the next world. Like, you can just play basically the first couple levels and then skip to the next world as just a way to fast-track to where you left off. Because you don't want to play Mario the first 8 worlds or the first 4 worlds every single time you start the game. You want to skip to the part that you couldn't beat last time.
You know what's funny to me about that game, just tangentially?
What's that?
A lot of people don't realize that you can, like, if you lose all your lives, you can start back in the world that you died on. I mean, it's a very simple cheat
code. But, I mean,
it's
like if you turn the NES off and come back the next day.
I've selectively erased that from my memory.
I know what you're saying. If you die and you leave the game on, you can go back to where you were.
But yeah, like, you can go back to, like,
if you come back the next day and you want to play again, you need to start from the very beginning.
True.
No questions asked. Like, you just have to. And maybe that's why that's in there. I don't know. But, like, in a game where you can save it, like, oh, this part's tough. Oh, I just want to skip it. Like, that's ridiculous.
What? I want to go off on a related tangent really briefly. I wanted to talk about Brain Challenge earlier, but this is so closely related that I want to bring it up now. Brain Challenge is like those Brain Age games, right?
Uh-huh.
I haven't played Brain Age so much, so I'm just assuming that it has a similar structure, but maybe not exactly. The really interesting thing about Brain Challenge is that they have like this daily game that you play every day. Okay? I mean, you don't have to, but the game is structured in a way so that it kind of encourages you. It asks you to play it every day. Mm-hmm. If you haven't played the game for a week, this fake, you know, polygonal doctor or woman or scientist is like, I haven't seen you in a week. What's going on?
That's essentially exactly what Brain Age is.
Right, right. Okay. So, and what they do is, you know, there's this daily test that you play, and it's essentially the same gameplay, right?
Uh-huh.
But they present it in a way so that, A, you know, they give you a metric at the end, which I think Brain Age does too. So they give you feedback about your performance. They show you like how you're improving, even though you're actually just playing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And think about that structure if they actually applied it to non-weird puzzle games. For example, think if they applied it to a platformer, for example. This kind of structure was, I think, intrinsic to a lot of classic games. It was just never specifically called out to the player in ways of encouragement, like, you know, like Brain Age and Brain Challenge does. For example, in Mario Brothers, you know, yeah, you can kind of skip around, but you have to get to the warp zone first.
You always
have
to play the world 1-1 and 1-2.
Right. So there's some repetition there, right? And one of the things that I think a lot of games have lost, a lot of modern games have lost, is the value of repetition. When a game is really, really good, it's not a chore to actually repeat things you've done before, because there's sufficient depth in the mechanics that you discover new things. You find yourself able to perform things in ways that you couldn't before, even though you're playing the same section of game over and over and over. This is something that back in the day, in the old NES days, people who had kind of like the patience and the wherewithal to put themselves through it, right? They discovered this kind of joy of playing this game. Whereas nowadays, it's like people are so averse to repeating anything at all. And I think that partially it's because
there's plenty of repetition that happens voluntarily these days.
No, but by repetition, I mean specifically, not like, oh, I'm going to kill this monster for the 80th time because I'm grinding. although there's that, right? People are more palatable that for some reason, but for more linearized games, there's this huge aversion to, oh, you know, I have to play this section of game over again. Why am I being subjected to this? It's like, I mean, am I right that there's just people don't feel like they should have to go through certain sections again unless it's,
I don't know,
some unique section that they really enjoy.
Well, I think relates to when you have like a part of game where, let's say, it involves actually going from point A to point B. Right, or a time frame, right, and you have to relive that exact same stretch. A play mechanic repeated, I haven't really seen too many complaints about.
Right.
If it's done right, obviously, every game is going to have the same game mechanic repeated.
This is what I'm getting.
It's well done. If it's a bad game.
Right, and what makes it well done?
Bad thing.
I think that what makes it well done is that there's sufficient depth to the way that the player can perform in the game that they discover new ways of doing the same things that they previously did on repeated plays. And there's a lot of games that don't give you that amount of latitude. And so when you have to do something over, it's like, okay, well, I've done this in the way that, you know, I've previously done, and so there's nothing new about it. You know, basically what I'm getting at is that there can be a lot of novelty and newness and interestingness in redoing something if the mechanics are deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of
Halo.
Yeah, exactly, right? I think a lot of games these days, though, especially the ones that are kind of like have this linear structure, maybe, you know, more of the narrative structure with the action scenes and the cutscenes and stuff like that, they don't have as much depth as a lot of the older games, and so we've become largely intolerant of redoing.
I think it just depends on the game you look at, and maybe you're just thinking of different games, because in my mind, I think there are a lot more games now that I would say that even doing the same thing over is still enjoyable. Like, I've played through Halo 3 several times, and it's fun every time, and it's different all three times I've done it.
Well, then it's not repetition, is it?
Well, no, it's repetition. I'm playing through the story mode. It's the same exact story all three times. It's slightly, I mean, I'm fighting the same enemies, but like, okay, well, this time I'm playing with two friends online, and I've got a ghost, and this and that, and he's flying the Banshee, and this, you know, whatever. Like, the way we attack the enemies is different. But it's like, we still have to kill this enemy to get to the next place and to go through the level, but like the way we do it is different. And I think Halo 3 is just a really good example.
That's good. That's a good quality.
And maybe not all games are as good as Halo 3, obviously. But
or maybe some games are better than Halo 3.
All right. Listen, we're going to go to break. But while you are not listening to the show, go to uat.edu to learn about the University of Advancing Technology and what they can offer. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woo-hoo!
And of course, we're back, the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, and we've been talking about whether or not a gamer should have an option to be a little bit more selective in the parts of the games that he chooses to play.
Or,
right?
Or completely, absolutely selective.
Yeah, and I think this is a tough question.
Peanut butter.
This is a tough question to pose because it doesn't make sense in real game environments all the time. The classic example is getting access to all the cars in a racing game or getting access to all the songs in a music game rather than having to unlock them. Mm-hmm. Unlockables in general apply to this question.
Here's one thing that's really funny that I just thought of. A lot of Codemasters games, for example, they have a unlocking progression to them.
Okay.
And they also come with the option, if you're inept, or if you consider the game to be merely a collection of hedonistic features there for your disposal and pleasure, you can call an 800 number and get an unlock code and unlock all the cars.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
The Codemasters has been doing this for several years now.
The only thing I remember about Codemasters is playing Pete Sampras tennis when I was in France for a few weeks, right, and had nothing else to do, and they had a cartridge with four controller ports on it, or two extra controller ports.
Sweet. So this is really funny, right, because this is kind of like their way of mitigating this issue, because I think a lot of players, especially those who... You know, I mean, I don't want to call them non-hardcore or casual, but it's usually what people refer to as those type, where they find themselves incapable of reaching a level of competency to unlock things, and so they feel that since they invested this money in the game, they should get something out of it, and so this is Codemasters' way of dealing with this issue, which I actually don't really have so much of a problem with because I don't feel inclined to call the 900 number and pay money and get a code.
Here's kind of the way I'm thinking about it. Like, the games that are designed well, people shouldn't have the tendency to want to have everything unlocked immediately. Like,
They shouldn't, right? But under certain circumstances, I think people do. And I think that I also think that this is a general trend in the video game culture to basically just be a gaming wimp and not have to work to get anything.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, there's a fraction of people that have that logic, but like, I mean, just to reference Call of Duty 4, one of my favorite games of last year.
You could even say that the masses have that logic.
That game is so well designed, in my opinion, the way you play through it, like, there was never a moment where I'm like, man, I really just wish I could unlock this thing right now, because it's like, there's so many guns, so many attachments to the guns and things like that, like, you're not good enough right away. Like, clearly you're not going to be good enough to use the sniper with this scope and this and that on it. You have to, like, unlock these things, basically. You have to earn to unlock these things. And it works so well in Call of Duty 4, in my opinion, where you start the game with X amount of guns with these kind of attachments, and you just get the iron sight and this and that. And then as you progress through the game, you learn how to use these other things as well. And then it makes sense to have those. But, like, if you just gave everybody everything to start,
right,
people wouldn't know what to do. Like, when Rainbow Six Vegas and had everything unlocked, and I'm just like, there's 80 options here. I don't know what to do. Okay, let's flip with this and that. And then I die immediately because I'm not using it properly.
Right. But on the other hand, there's – I think the funny thing about this is that there's a lot of games that – demand a lot from players, and there's also a lot of players who don't have the skill set to basically reach those demands, or they don't feel like they're motivated enough to reach that level to unlock things.
Well, then don't play the game.
And this is well, sure, obviously, right?
And that's the argument.
Yeah.
Right. But on the other hand, right, it's like, okay, well, the companies who are putting these games out
want to sell.
They don't care about that. They just care about selling as many as possible. And so to give them, you know, the special gun right away, even though they're not equipped to use it, even though they will never experience the actual beauty of the interaction that that gun has that you can only experience if you've invested time and effort into the game, mm-hmm. right? They don't appreciate it on that level, but they can appreciate it on, oh, that's a cool explosion level, right? And, I mean, in some terms, that's valid too, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
All right. I think perhaps we may have...
Maybe we should...
I think maybe we chewed through our ability to...
I've got a little story in a little bit about this, but go ahead.
All right. So right now, I want to bring Scott on. He's he calls us a lot.
That we've kid
him,
again?
Yeah. We've got him on... on the phone, waiting to talk.
Scott, you're awesome.
He's got all his notes ready to go, but we're going to play a little game. Scott, you're on the air. We are going to flip this around. Instead of you asking me a question, I'm going to ask you a question. We got an email this week pertaining to this issue, and the idiosyncratic idiot, which is not Scott, the person who emailed us, he poses this question. There's a whole tirade, and he says, besides, there's the obvious question of challenge and progression. And so I'm going to ask you this question, Scott. If I don't need to earn things in a game, what is the point of playing at all? Can you answer that?
What's the point of enjoyment at all?
Yeah, what's the... If you don't have to earn something in a game, why bother playing? Do you have any reaction to that?
Why bother watching a movie? it's just... I mean, it's... For some types of games, maybe, but I mean... The point of playing a game is to enjoy yourself.
So it should have innately... interesting qualities, regardless of whether or not you're earning something. Is that what you're saying?
It should be masturbatory.
I think it depends on the game.
We're not talking about porn movies.
Yeah, there. I find that it seems that, especially for multiplayer games, what makes the game technically good is, as Cliffy B calls it, the water cooler moment. It's not so much, and I guess this is why social gaming is taking off, it's not so much about the score at the end of the game. It's like, oh my god, there was this one time I set the guy's head off, and I lost the match, but it doesn't matter because I totally pick a guy out of his car, and it's like those little situations where you just are so, it's a specific thing inside a game, and it's made up of several events that, several of those events tie together. It's not necessarily the score at the end for most cases. It tends to be the enjoyment along the way.
Types of moments, it could be something that you did uniquely in the gameplay that you want to tell everyone about, or like, I mean, it could be a narrative thing, like you're telling somebody, oh, I got to, you know, this area, and then, like, you know, this guy did this to that other guy. I mean, like, that could be a water cooler moment, too, so I don't think that precisely encapsulates it.
Can I just chime in quick? He wants to be called Cliff Blazinski now. He's trying not to be known by Cliffy B because he wants to be more serial.
Respect.
I'll just call him the designer for me, known as Cliffy.
Yeah. I mean, what I find really interesting, actually, about the concept of unlockables is that it was apparently so popular and becoming such a cornerstone of game development that Microsoft decided to make it mandatory in every game that's released on their system.
It's mandatory?
Well, the achievements are essentially
unlockables. No, they're not unlockables.
Well, they're in a way they are because it's a reward that you're getting for doing something, but in another way they aren't completely because you're not getting anything functional. You're just getting a number added to another
number. You're
getting
a score. It's not really unlockable.
Like, I wouldn't dignify it by calling it a score, really.
Well, it's nerd points.
It is nerd points. That's good enough for me.
That's all it is. Yeah. It's not like, oh, I unlocked getting 20,000 points in Centipede. Like, you just get that many points. Like, oh, I did this thing in the game and I got points for it. It's not really an unlockable. Like, an unlockable would be like, I did this thing and got this attachment for my gun.
And I know it doesn't affect the gameplay, but I think you understand the point.
But it's not unlockable.
Sometimes they do.
What?
Especially the Valve achievements. If, like, when you want to get the new guns in, for example, Team Fortress 2, you get them by getting a certain set of achievements, and the number you get of those you get in a certain class will dictate what gun you'll get in the class.
I haven't really played TF2, so I don't know what you're talking about.
That's interesting.
Okay, but that's just, I mean, it's intrinsic to the game. They just happen to make a correspondence with achievements, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't the achievements themselves that let them do that.
Well, I'm guessing they could actually calculate how many achievement points you've gotten, and then correlate them to an in-game unlockable.
I guess.
But it didn't matter which achievement you get.
or for Gears of War 2, if you get an achievement in Gears of War 1, then it will automatically unlock something in Gears of War 2. I think it's like being in the game will unlock, and Gears of War 1 will unlock the final boss in Gears of War 2 with a multiplayer character, things like that.
Yeah, I've heard about that stuff.
All right,
I mean,
well now,
it's not necessarily a cool quote, but...
Since I caught you off guard, Scott, go ahead. Did you have another question to ask? We're about to go to break, so anything you want to add real quick before we go to break?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I'll skip on this and go to the flutes. The thing with flutes, though, is not so much a level skip because they're hidden very, very, very oddly.
We're talking about Super Mario Bros. 3,
yeah.
The warp flute.
What? Yeah.
Flute?
It's a flute. It's
oh,
a lute.
Okay, go
it's
ahead.
It's a piccolo. No, I don't
it's
know.
It's a whistle.
It's a whistle?
Because they're kind of held in really, really odd places, and it seems like if you happen to find one, you get rewarded by going to World 4. If you find two, you get rewarded by skipping the entire game going to race with World 8. So it's more of a reward than a skipping section, as it seems.
Yeah, so in that case, it seems more like a bona fide reward.
I used it to be able to beat the game real fast. Because you can get two in the first world, go to World 2 and skip the 7 and then 8, you're done. Game over. Anyway, thanks for the call. Stay on the line. We'll talk to you again when we're back.
Welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. We've been spending, I think, this whole show talking about this one topic, huh?
Yeah, and
finally.
There's so many other things we wanted to talk about.
We should talk about like 8 more shows about this topic.
Yeah, that's
we're
right.
Out of time.
No.
We're talking about whether you should be able to do whatever you want or whatever the designer wants in a game.
Now, before we get back to our callers, I want to remind everyone to go to uat.edu and learn about the University of Advanced Technology. They keep this show alive. One day we'll have other advertisers that make us even more alive.
Let's hope so.
Full of effervescence.
Yes.
Nice. Right?
We have to keep using big words because people write to us and say how they like us. You know,
I thought you were going to use that one word from the email that you didn't use.
Fallacious?
Yeah, there you go.
I thought that was nice.
We are definitely not fallacious.
Hey, well, it depends. There are two different words that sound the same. Those are homonyms, am I right? All right,
sure.
So... we're not going to get back to Scott on the air, but he did mention in chat that one of the other things he was going to ask about was just to contrast a game that's sandboxy, so you can do anything, and Grand Theft Auto is the perfect example, versus a game that's more linear. Let's say Super Mario Brothers, right?
Actually, let's say like Castlevania 1.
Let's say
which is literally,
Final Fantasy.
No, which is literally linear.
Completely linear.
Yes.
You're right.
Mega Man? No, that's not at all.
One thing that he pointed out was that... I've talked on the show about how I didn't really get much out of Grand Theft Auto 3 because it was so free-flowing and sort of boring to do the single player that I just sort of did whatever I wanted, and I got bored of it quickly because there's, you know, a clear limit to how many free-roaming things you can do. Eventually, it just gets boring of driving around cars and running over people and whatever. Whereas he says that he actually did the story and never picked it up again because it was too linear in
his
opinion.
What's that,
Grand Theft Auto 3? Yeah.
What?
Yeah, tell me about it. It was a little weird.
Okay. GTA 3 is an example of where they give you too many options.
Maybe he was trying to use a different word. GTA 3, though, I think is a good example of, and by good, I mean like representative of the kind of game where they're like, well, you know, if you get bored of doing A, then we've got, you know, A through, you know, or B through double Z.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the problem with that kind of structure is that even though you feel like you can do just whatever you want, if you come across any kind of difficulty or really like anything you don't feel like doing at the moment, you can, since you're so easily able to change it, and a lot of times you're never really able to go through a certain struggle that has value in games.
Yeah. Well, the one thing with Grand Theft Auto for me, it falls victim to there's so many options, I choose none of them. It's a common thing. I mean, where if you give a person too many options
to choose from, you won't know what to do, right? Since there's no direction.
Okay, there's 8 missions I can do.
Right.
Screw it. I'm just gonna go kill some pedestrians, and then I get bored and I turn it off.
Right. Or you don't know what to do. You don't know what's right. You know, you don't know if you're doing something wrong. Or sometimes, I mean, I think this happens more with people who are more experienced gamers. They kind of have an impression or some kind of model of what the game wants them to do or expects them to do.
Uh-huh.
And so if it's so open, it's like you're not sure what's going on. You're not sure if you're supposed to do this, if you're going to miss out on something, if you do the other thing. You don't know, like, there's, you feel like there should be some trade-offs in what you're deciding between, mm-hmm. but since you have no information, you have no idea what those trade-offs are.
Yep.
And that's a rather uncomfortable feeling.
Yep.
All right. Well,
okay.
I'm going to jump in and say that we've got another caller on the line. We've got Pen15, who hasn't actually called into the show for quite a while. We've only got a few minutes, so let's bring him on the air.
I think he's been in hiding.
He's been listening to the show, man.
Hopefully working on the Red Star song, haven't you, Pen?
Of course. That's all I've been doing.
And you're finished with it, and it's your magnum opus, isn't it?
You better
it?
Have made two of them by now.
I told Ara I do have two of them ready.
All right. Well, send them over. What do you want us to talk about?
Well, I wanted to relate your progression talk with Soul Calibur 4, which I've been playing a lot of.
I had a feeling you'd probably be playing a lot of the game. I have actually yet to see it.
Yeah, it's an amazing game, and for me, like, speaking of racing games, it would be nice if the game sort of tested you and or just automatically knew if you beat the first race with a, like, 5 seconds ahead of the last player, well, then obviously you're probably new. But, you know, if you're, like, a master of it, like Ara probably is, and gets a whole 45 seconds ahead of anyone, then obviously you're good, and it should just automatically unlock a bunch of stuff because it knows you're ready for that stuff.
That's a really good point, and not because you called me a master, but I think that's a level of design and implementation that most, like, almost no games do. I mean, the only thing I can think of that even comes close to that is kind of like, you know, in Halo when you were in the beginning and... You know, you're like, oh, walk up to this plate. Oh, press up. Oh, press down. Right? And it actually set whether your controls are inverted or not based on whether you initially decided down was up or up was down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is genius. You know, that kind of stuff we need to see more of. But
I didn't even realize
can
it
I just,
did that.
Can I say something quick? I like how Penn said that, like, oh, yeah, Soul Calibur 4 is awesome. Speaking of racing games, like...
Well, I was about to say the part about Soul Calibur in that everything unlocks early and very easily. So while it doesn't bother me because I'm very, very good at Soul Calibur, I realize then that there are going to be a ton of players that go online that will get destroyed because they didn't have to do all the hard stuff that you had to do in the original Soul Calibur. Because the single-player mode in Soul Calibur, I think called Quest Mode, is so long and comprehensive and forces you to use all the tactics that you finish it and you are a good Soul Calibur player. There's no question about it.
So
there's
you're
no way
saying
you can
that
BS.
Number 4 doesn't have that, but you did the other ones?
Yeah, number 4 does not have that. So there's going to be a lot of people who pick up Soul Calibur 4 and it's going to be their first Soul Calibur.
Wait, something's telling me there won't be a lot of people who pick up that game.
Soul Calibur 4 got rid of like the whole quest mode thing?
Yeah.
Like, where you go through with your character and, like, you have to do all these fights and unlock all these weapons and,
like...
It
has a different type of mode that wasn't in the previous.
Because
it has,
really
like,
cool.
a tower mode, but it's not the same. Like, there were so many
tower
things,
mode.
Like, now you have to fight this guy and you can't block. Or now you have to fight this guy and you have to perfect guard him. And mm-hmm. you have to learn every little aspect of the game that forced you to be good.
Yeah.
Because right now, anybody who plays Soul Calibur automatically hates the new characters. Not because they're bad, just because you don't know how to use them. And without that sort of progression to force you to learn how to play, you will never appreciate someone like Ivy or someone like Taki, who are very complex characters.
Or maybe you'll only appreciate them on superficial levels.
I think that's the one reason why I ever liked the Soul Calibur on... I think I had it on GameCube with Link or whatever. Because it made you go through. It's not like, oh, now you're just going to fight more people. It's like, okay, you're going to fight this person, but... Like, you don't get to block, or your weapon is super weak because you have to use the entry-level weapon against somebody with a higher-level weapon. Or, you know, there's specific things about each fight that you can't or have to do something to beat them.
I think the bottom line is that it was a very educational method.
It's very, yeah, I really like that part of the game. If that's not in Soul Calibur 4...
It's been pulled out.
Well, it is, but there's no sort of carrot that's at the end of that...
Yeah,
of that road. So
and part of it was
a
like,
lot of people are going to skip it because it is very hard once you get to the more difficult areas.
Yeah, because part of it, you know, why you had to keep going is like to get the best weapon. Like in order, you have to get like all the way to the end to unlock all of their weapons, so then you could use them in multiplayer. Like that was like half the reason right there. It's just the incentive of getting the best weapon. I don't know. That's just the way I saw it.
I'm just still bothered by the idea that they have Yoda and Vader and not in the same game.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's going to be DLC later.
Okay.
Yoda should not fight.
Good, so you can pay for something.
Let's not get into
Yoda
Star Wars.
And Yoda and Darth Vader should both automatically beat every other character in those games because they have lightsabers.
Nope. We're geeks, but we're not that geeks.
No, I am.
Doesn't Ivy have the magic sword, though?
She has a sword that can like turn into like a like whoosh, chain thing.
There's a bunch of magic swords.
But like, guess what happens when it touches a lightsaber? Bye-bye.
All right, I got to say something before we go. Thank you for calling in, Penn. Remember, I still need people to submit questions for the Family Feud event at PAX. To clarify, we will not be doing the Chatterbox trivia show called the Chatterbox Treasure Box this year. I'm going to focus on Family Feud. But if you're going to be at PAX, of course, we will be doing Family Feud Sunday morning. So please show up. That's in just a few weeks. And Rich and I are going to work on making that actually a good show this year. Well, it was good last year, too.
I hope I'll be there.
But I don't even think you're going to be there.
I don't think I will.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We will be back next week. As always, we might be sans Ara, but we'll live. Anything else, guys?
You'll live.
All right. We'll talk to you next week. Bye, everybody.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bases belong to us.